the sibling of the laughing cow. Yeah, one does soft cheese and one does the Edinburgh Free Fringe.
Yes, the laughing horse. Famously a jovial animal.
The horse. Yeah. That is interesting, actually. Yeah, the horse is not a very comedy animal. Yeah. They're, if anything, they're kind of like, they're like the official animal of like mental health. Like every horse is mentally ill.
Yeah.
Like, don't cycle near me, I'll kick you.
Yeah. I guess Mr. Ed, famously, famous funny horse.
Mr. Ed?
You don't know Mr. Ed?
No.
Oh, he's a, I think it was either the 50s or the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the 60s. You know how there was a run in the American sitcoms in the 60s? It was like genies and like witches.
Yeah.
The big aliens. One of them was a talking horse named Mr. Ed.
Okay.
Who's, Wilbur was his human friend.
Right, okay, yeah.
And the way they would make him talk is they put peanut butter on his teeth and then his lips.
Great. The classic.
I don't know why that must have been rerun on television when I was a kid. A lot of reruns of this black and white.
I love that he's like quite a formal horse as well.
Yeah, Mr. Ed.
That's Mr. Ed to you.
Yeah. Not 100% sure what Mr. Ed's adventures would be because he's often just in the barn. But he was the talking horse, and I think only Wilbur knew.
Mm.
That's kind of how it worked.
We get some talking animals in this episode. Get a little bit of discussion of the biblical snake.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's true.
There you go. A bit of a tenuous link there.
I thought we got that.
It's Masters of Our Domain. It's the pre-Edinburgh Fringe panic episode, at least for me. Pete is just displaying a degree of calm and sang-froid that I'm sure the listener has come to associate with him.
Which is only heightening your anxiety.
I do find you quite a soothing present. I think having someone else here who is also like pranging as much as I am, would be a detrimental to. I'm not normally the person who's freaking out.
Yeah.
And I think this is the most I've ever been freaking out about any work related thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that this is like I'm really. Having like I'm like an anxious person, but I have like physical anxiety about this degree just like shit that has to be done. That's a fun way to open the pod. I was in the gym watching Alan Partridge on my phone.
Yeah.
And then I was like, man, I am not feeling normal.
It is funny because, you said that, right before this, you were watching it on your phone in the gym.
Yeah.
Then you had a cigarette.
Yeah.
You've had a coffee. You're wired.
I'm pulling all the levers right now. Yeah. Again, for the listener, the daytime cigarette for me is quite an extreme.
Mm.
Like cigarettes are for nighttime when I've had a couple of beers, maybe. But a middle of the day on a Tuesday cigarette, that's someone you should be hitting the big panic button. The big Marlo Edwards is not doing so good.
Yeah.
But it did help a bit,
That's good.
Just clear the mind.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I should be medicated. Medicated for something.
Well, it's not all the time, though. This is just a once off.
No,
you don't normally have a cigarette right before most of these records.
No.
I just want that on the record.
Yeah. Maybe we should do like a kind of Mad Men style podcast where we're all just like constantly smoking and drinking throughout.
Oh, part of the, this is, we move to Austin. We start smoking indoors. Part of that of revolution.
Oh, yeah, we can. Yeah, we have like a sexy secretary who we treat with absolute contempt. Some of the most misogynist language you can imagine.
Yeah.
And we're ideas men.
Yeah.
Just sit around.
Yeah, just sit around pitching ideas.
Yeah, that is fun.
Somebody brings in a product. We're like, oh, what about this? What about if Coca-Cola is hot?
It's so fun. I love, for that reason, doing... Occasionally, when I'll get asked to like note someone else's show and just like write gags or just like give comments or whatever, because it's like I will endeavor to do a great job and I'll usually write shitloads of stuff and people are often surprised at how many things I come up with.
Yeah.
But also it's like the eating the cream out of the Oreo. Like I get to just sit here and have ideas and then I'm not responsible for any of the difficulties that those ideas will then create.
Yeah,
like absolutely. I don't have to do any of the vegetables, none of the like, fuck, how would this all be structured or anything like that. I get to just sit there and just be like, yeah, what about this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is the best part. The best part of writing jokes for somebody else is that you only have to make them laugh in a moment and they don't, you don't have to really deal with it. Yeah. That's the easy bit. It's been like, laugh one time at an idea you just thought of. They're like, yeah, that is good. Yeah. And then they have to go and say it again for a year. And they find out that it's not good.
It's kind of like getting a woman pregnant versus being a pregnant woman. You know, that's,
yeah. That's the analogy. What is much harder? To bring
like,
a baby.
Hey, I help.
Yeah, to bring a baby to term.
Yeah.
It's like, that is very difficult.
Yeah.
To get a woman pregnant, it's very easy. But like, it's a lot of fun in the moment, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people love it, famously. I'm about to give hideous man birth to this show. Live on stage. Yeah, and I guess what I'm looking for is the just stretching this analogy as far as it will go.
Yeah.
I need the kind of like the epidural that's going to get me through this process.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That is the best thing about notes, or like, yeah, giving somebody jokes or giving somebody notes. It's like, really, ultimately, it's like, yeah, but I don't care.
And good luck.
And good luck to you.
And enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, we're not here to talk about that.
No, of course not.
We are here to talk about Alan Partridge once again. It's season 2, episode 4. Yeah, never say Alan again.
It relates. The titles, they've come back around. They've circled around.
Although an interesting choice, because this is an episode about Alan being a Bond obsessive, which is something that it gets kind of touched on a bit in other episodes, but this is really the core of the famous stop getting Bond wrong speech. But the Bond film that they're referencing there, Never Say Never Again, is an unofficial one.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fake Bond.
The fake Bond.
Yeah.
That's the Sean Connery Returns.
Yeah, have you seen it?
No, I don't think so.
So it's a remake of Thunderball.
Mm.
And I can't remember exactly what the origins of it were, but I think basically Sean Connery had some like creative differences on Thunderball.
Yeah.
Or like it was Never Say Never Again was made by one of the guys who wrote Thunderball, and like he didn't agree with like the rest of the team or something like that. So basically he wanted to like do Thunderball brackets Taylor's version. And then so they brought Sean Connery out to do it. But by this point, Sean Connery is like old.
Yeah.
Because I think it's from like 87 and his last Bond film was like late 60s.
Yeah.
Although I think actually Roger Moore was older than Sean Connery.
At this point.
Roger Moore was older than Sean Connery full stop in a crazy.
Oh, right.
Because there's something about like one of the Bond girls was like younger than Roger Moore's daughter or something like that in one of the movies.
Roger Moore does always look pretty old. In my mind, it's like he's always been like an older dude, but like young Sean Connery is young.
Yeah. But there's a kind of
the dumbest thing I've ever said.
Young Sean Connery is young. No wrong answers on this pod. But yeah, there's like as they age, there's a more like haggard, weathered quality to Sean Connery, whereas Roger Moore has this kind of refined gentleman aesthetic.
Yeah.
And he's done less interviews where he talks about how you need to hit your wife, which is always a positive.
Yes.
We have to hand it to Roger Moore on one. It's definitely 1-0 to Roger Moore in that regard.
Yeah.
A woman. Really? Yeah. Hard to do the more.
Sean Connery, probably I can't quite figure out why, but he was, when I was growing up, like one, despite having not seen a lot of his films, possibly only his cameo in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, I'm like, Sean Connery is one of my favorite actors. I love this old man.
He's not even credited on Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, which is crazy.
Yeah.
This is so famous. And they're just like, oh.
I think that's because that was probably my favorite film for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think anybody in that, I was like, you are I love you.
Yeah.
I was just a kid. I was just like, you're the best. Of course I love you and whatever you're in. I never saw any of his Bond films, but I'm like, Sean Connery is one of my favorite actors.
And that's why Bryan Adams is your favorite musician.
Yeah, still is.
It is a banger, to be fair.
It's a great song.
Yeah. My girlfriend and I were always saying when they will occasionally play it on the radio, because I think this country possibly loved that song more than any other country on earth. Because it was like, it's our longest ever reigning number one.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I think it was like 16 weeks or something.
Yeah.
And, famously, it's like a really long song. It's like nearly 7 minutes.
Yeah.
When they play it on the radio, they cut it out at the. There's that bit where it seems like it's over and then it comes back.
Yeah.
And then we're always like, that's the best bit when it comes back.
Yeah.
Cruelly radio edited out. They don't do that with Bohemian Rhapsody. They know people are going to notice.
Yeah.
But yeah, everything I do, brackets, I do it for you, gets the old snippity snip treatment.
No need for it to be in brackets.
No, exactly. I don't know if they used the whole song in the movie either.
Yeah, possibly over the credits. But they don't in the part when it appears.
No. No. No, it's very true. Well, yeah, we've got to pay tribute to one of the great Canadians.
I mean, he is.
He is.
Probably a Juno winner.
But yeah. No, very good. Yeah. But has he got an Aria? Probably.
He can't. Surely he can't.
Do they not give them out to non-Australians?
Maybe there's an international award.
The occasional Kiwi slips through the net.
Yeah. One of my favorite parts of any Australian award ceremony is when they give out an international award to, presumably, they do this in the film mm-hmm. awards. They give out best international film to a film that couldn't care. There's no way it's like, oh, yeah, thanks.
Best international film, The Departed.
Yeah. Martin Scorsese getting a phone call to be like, hey, you won. And we're like, what is this? An Australian award. Oh, cool. Thank you.
Best foreign language film. It was in American English. You know, it's a bit different.
Yeah, spelled. Yeah, the way they said favor, you could tell there wasn't a U in it. You know?
Yeah. We actually had it dubbed. You've got all these guys in the Boston Mafia going, Struth. Some guys
bloody,
out in the Northern Territory.
Hell.
Finally, I understand it.
Shipping up to Brisbane.
There we go. There we go. Yeah. You working for the fucking corpse, right? It's probably more of a Melbourne guy. Yeah, we're having fun. That is the main thing. We get a little opening radio segment.
Yes.
As per usual. I forget what the phone-in is about now.
It's about what would you do on your bank holiday and with which famous person?
Ah, yes. And he gets a call-in from a man who says he would go to Legoland Windsor with Sean Connery and then have a lovely lamb lunch.
Yeah.
And Alan says, I don't think that would be Sean Connery's cup of tea.
Yeah.
I think he'd prefer going to a wildlife park with a bottle of scotch. Which is particularly funny because Sean Connery doesn't sound like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Sean Connery. Yeah. Yeah, and then him saying, no, he'd go to Legoland.
Yeah, and then just hanging up. Perfect. It's harking back to the drill and the power pack.
Yeah.
Have you seen the movie Highlander?
I don't think I have.
Just Connery's accent made me think of it because it's completely insane movie. Well, basically the premise is that like there are these immortal warriors.
Yes.
One of whom is called the Highlander because he was like a Scottish.
I am far more familiar with the premise of Highlander than Highlander. And that people would often reference being like, oh, it's like Highlander. You know, you're the last one. There can only be one. The last one is Dragonheart, another Sean Connery great.
Right, yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, but the guy who's the Highlander, who's supposed to be this immortal Scottish warrior who's now living in New York, is played by Christoph Lambert.
Yeah.
Who's either French Canadian or French, but he apparently could not speak English at the time of the making of that film and was like saying lines by rote. And it's very the Room energy. It's very Tommy Wiseau, like, but I'm the Highlander. But then his like mentor is Sean Connery, who's supposed to be this like immortal Egyptian Spanish warrior, but he is like he's just talking in his normal Sean Connery voice. You've got like a Frenchman pretending to be Scottish talking to a Scotsman pretending to be Spanish. Just a chaos of accents in that movie.
And a lot of sequels to the Highlanders.
God, have they made more?
They made multiple Highlanders.
Oh yeah, it didn't need a sequel.
Yeah,
I mean, awesome movie in the sense of just like, it feels like a movie they would go and see in Seinfeld.
Positive there's sequels to this. I don't know why I'm obsessed with bringing it up.
You are quite possibly right about that. That does seem like the sort of thing they would do.
I'm also thinking in my mind, there's no reason for this to be, for there to be an overlap. Yeah, there's a bunch.
Oh my God.
There's so many.
They've done a bunch of novels.
I'm also thinking of, in my mind, it overlaps with Universal Soldier in no way. There's no way it overlaps with Universal Soldier, but because they're both films that shouldn't have sequels, that's why I think of Highlander and Universal Soldier. It just feels like a VHS double rental that you'd be like, oh, yeah, great, I'll grab those two.
It's also such a funny movie to do a sequel to, given that the way that the movie ends is he's the last Highlander now.
Yeah.
Because he kills
them. But he can't be. Because there's another four sequels.
And they're like, ah, damn, we got you. Yeah, Highlander Scimitar, Highlander Scotland the Brave, Highlander Measure of a Man. Oh, no, sorry, those are the novels. Novelizations are great. Sorry, Highlander 2, The Quickening. Highlander 3, The Sorcerer.
The Quickening's great.
Yeah. Highlander Endgame, Highlander The Search for Vengeance, and Highlander The Source, both of which came out in 2007. What a year.
I feel like the Highlander, the fact that the like Highlander anime franchise continues is based solely on how much people love the idea of the premise of there can only be one.
Yeah.
That's why there's more. We understand what it is.
But the one was so good that we have to make more.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then eventually all of the Highlander movies will do battle and will determine which is the best
one. Which is the best Highlander.
And it will obviously be Highlander 1.
Yeah. I mean, maybe The Quickening's great. We don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe that could be a movie corner on the spot. Highlander, The Quickening. You heard it here first.
Highlander 2, The Quickening.
Yeah, so Alan then, he toddles off. Oh, wait, no, he has an encounter with Dave Clifton, of course, as he so often does.
Yes.
Where Dave Clifton is starting to fight back.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's asking him what he's going to do with the bank holiday weekend. He's kind of implying that Dave Clifton is a lonely man. He's like, what friends are you going to be seeing? Is it Jack Daniel or Johnny Walker or Glenn Morangi, which I really enjoyed. I like that he's stretching himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he reveals that he's going to be watching Bond films with the man who works at a petrol station all weekend, and that's.
And then who does he mentions? I don't know why I've got the Archers written down.
Oh yes, that's it. So Dave Clifton, in a thing laser targeted to get at Alan Partridge, says that he's actually going to be doing archery with Tony Hadley, which is very like Alan's dictaphone coded.
Yeah.
Because he's getting his level 4 archery certificate and Tony Hadley is into archery. Very believable.
Yeah. Who's Tony Hadley?
Tony Hadley is the main guy from Spandau Ballet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. But apparently, okay. And I don't want to get my, you're familiar with Spandau Ballet. That's it.
I'm familiar with the name.
I know that this much is true. Those guys, yeah. Gold, always believe in yourself. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm there, I'm caught up.
Of whom at least one of the other members of Spandau Ballet went on to be in EastEnders.
Right.
If we're drawing the map here. Supposedly Tony Hadley is like penniless now.
Mm.
Because for some, even though he was like the lead singer, I think it was either Gary or Martin Kemp wrote all of the songs and have basically like, I don't know, some kind of internal thing means that he doesn't really get any royalties.
Right.
And he was recently at some pub near where my girlfriend's from, like singing all the hits of Spandau Ballet, literally just for money. Like just like, not even like, oh, he lives in the area and, you know, he thought it would be a laugh or whatever. Like, no, like I need this ticket.
You gotta hire for it.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the vicious rumor that I heard. So maybe he's not got the money for archery anymore.
Damn.
But that's rough. You can see the cogs turning in Alan's head as he's like, could I come to the meet Tony Hadley? Yeah.
And then he rips on, and then he brings up the different types of archers. Now, yes. Is the archers that he refers to as one of the archers? Is that what is that?
Right. So yeah, basically he says, he's like, I hate archers.
Yeah.
He's like, I hate archers, the archers and Jeffrey Archer. You're all deceitful cowards.
Yeah.
And then he says, actually, in retrospect, that only applies to archers and Jeffrey Archer, not the archers, who, to be fair, are a mixed bag. So the archers,
yes,
in that sense, is a BBC, I want to say Radio 4, long-running soap opera.
Yeah.
I think it might possibly be the longest running soap opera in the world ever, because it started in like, I want to say like the 1940s
right,
or something. And it's about this family called the Archers. And
yes,
it's like, and it has this like fucking theme tune that everyone. Anyway, I mean, of course, it's shit. It's terrible.
I love the things that seem to exist simply because they have existed for the longest, so they can get to continue to exist because, like, well, this is the one that's existed for the longest. It's like the mousetrap at the West End.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's just like, well, I'm not going to be the person who's going to cancel the longest running, you know, theater.
Well, someone's got to take care of that mouse problem that they've got in the West End, and you know, one production bravely changes on. You go in there, and it's just one of those really big, like, levered traps with some cheese on it.
Like, oh, that's what this is.
We got big mice.
Yeah. Yeah, pensioners just go love to watch that mousetrap just hover above that mouse.
Yeah. No, I really, radio dramas, there's so many like long running like radio things in the UK. And I don't know if you get this, but like radio, I always find like radio acting so hilarious.
Yeah.
Because they're doing that kind of like, what? You can't come in here like that. Well, of course I can. Like they're kind of like speaking in a way that no person has ever spoken.
This has got to be the only country still doing radio drama, right?
It's got to be, presumably.
It has to be.
And then you discover that like The Archers for some reason is massive in Serbia.
Yeah.
And you're just like, yeah, what? We discovered that we did an episode of another podcast about the old British sitcom Only Fools and Horses from like the 80s and 90s. And we discovered that it was so popular in the Balkans that they made their own version, like initially like dubbed versions, and then they made one that was set in like Belgrade or whatever for a Serbian audience because they fucking loved Del Boy so much. And we were like, this is crazy. This is wild. The Cockney archetype.
Yeah.
Making its way to war-torn Yugoslavia of the 90s.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, baffling stuff.
All right, so that's The Archers. Okay.
Yeah, that is The Archers. And then he toddles off to the petrol station, as per usual.
Mm-hmm.
He's chatting to Michael, where he encounters that Michael has a new friend.
Yes.
Tex, short for Terry. It is played by Peter Serafinowicz, who likes American things. He's wearing like a fringed cowboy jacket.
Yes.
Yeah.
Another Spacer alum popping up on the show.
Oh, yeah, of course. Mm. Yeah. A man who we'll be hearing a lot more from times to come. Well, I mean, times to come if you're currently listening to this in 2002 when the series came out. I don't know if we'll be hearing that much more from him now. He still gets about Peter Serafinowicz. He's one of those behind the scenes guys.
Before I say this out loud, I'm going to look this up and then say it out loud. But yeah, he is always around, or he was around a lot in that period of time.
Yeah, for sure. This is kind of like early career in them because he went on to have his own sketch show. And he was in Shaun of the Dead.
Yes.
The following year.
He's in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, there you go.
Done very well for himself.
Yeah, he's doing all right. He's parlayed himself quite well into some pretty, pretty lucrative stuff.
Yeah, he's the voice of Darth Maul in Star Wars Episode One: The Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
I should have just said it. I knew it.
Yeah, you did. You doubted yourself.
I knew it. Of course I knew it.
Yeah. Man, we rewatched that recently.
Yeah.
And what a crazy movie.
Yeah, it's wild. I rewatched it recently too.
Yeah, because my girlfriend was like, I've never seen the Star Wars movie. We've been watching The Mandalorian as like, there's a certain type of TV show we will watch after midnight when we're not ready to go to bed, but neither of us will be paying attention to it. And I'm like, this is dumb enough.
Yes.
That fits the bill for that. So we've been watching it. And then she's like asking me all of these questions about like Star Wars lore. And I'm like, you're not really asking the right guy here. I'm not really a Star Wars guy. I know the basics, but like, yeah, I don't know who fucking Glup Shido is or whatever. I'm not.
Yeah.
And then she was like, I've never really watched any of the Star Wars movies. I think she'd seen a couple of the 70s ones, like vaguely as a kid, but hadn't seen any of the prequels.
Yeah.
Which was insane to me because they came out when we were kids. So those were the ones that we watched. Yeah. Anyway, so then one night she's like, well, maybe we should watch one of them. And I'm like, all right, we'll start at the beginning. So I put on The Phantom Menace. And like 20 minutes in, we're like, this is one of the craziest things. I don't remember it being this crazy. The way they managed to be like racist to like four different ethnicities, despite none of those ethnicities technically being in the film.
Yeah.
Like the one planet where everyone has like a comedy Chinese accent and you're just like, what's going on?
It is wild.
Peter Serafinowicz loves American stuff. He's got himself a truck. He wants to go to the truck fest.
And he loves a particular American, Wayne.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then he keeps saying, Wayne's sleep?
Yeah, yeah. He's sort of saying, oh, I'm more, he's like, cause Michael says, Alan likes James Bond.
Yeah.
And then he says, I'm more of a Wayne man, obviously referring to John Wayne.
John Wayne, obviously.
And then Alan goes, who, Wayne's sleep? Who is I feel like a British actor, but could possibly be American. Kind of big in the 70s, but he's a dancer. That's right. Yeah. Here we go. Wayne Philip Collins Sleep, OBE, born July 1948, is a British dancer, director, choreographer, and actor who appeared on the BBC series The Real Marigold on Tour and ITV's The Real Full Monty.
I mean, that's
from Plymouth.
Actually really funny.
Yeah, he went to the Royal Ballet School.
There you go. Oh my God, he's 5 foot two.
And then he says all the things he likes about John Wayne. He goes, Wayne, sleep.
Yeah.
Like the frills. That's
yeah, cool. Very funny. As an actor, as an actor, Sleep's credits include Tigger in Winnie the Pooh.
Great.
What? So he was doing the voice? They're like, ooh. He danced with Princess Diana. Well, there we go.
He danced with Princess Diana.
Ah, and in 2003, he appeared in the reality TV series I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, presumably off the back of being referenced in I'm Alan Partridge in 2002. They were like, there's hunger for sleep.
People want Wayne Sleep.
What a name.
Very funny name.
Is that, I wonder if that's his real name. Yeah, it seems to be. It doesn't say like, oh, you know, born this or whatever.
Yeah, you wouldn't pick Wayne Sleep. It doesn't really roll off the tongue.
It's just such an odd...
Wayne Sleep. Ladies and gentlemen, Wayne Sleep.
He'll put you to sleep. Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those funny surnames where you're like, what is the origin of that?
Yeah.
Sometimes, because you don't get it as much in the UK. Like, occasionally you'll get one where, like, someone's been a bit like Ellis Islanded, you know, like they've, you know, moved. They had some, like...
Yeah, they get to pick it.
Inexplicable Lithuanian surname, and some guy at some British port of entry was like, Sleep, that'll do. Yeah, that's close enough. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know Wayne Sleep's ethnic background, so I won't be
and
speculating.
We never will.
No, we can't ask. It wouldn't be right. He keeps bringing up Wayne Sleep. And, we get this kind of funny scene where he's like, Michael, how many other men are you talking to?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, you know, three or four. They're just lonely men. You know, they come in here, they just need, and Alan's upset. You know, he feels cheated on.
Mm.
He feels sort of betrayed.
Mm.
And so then he decides to strike up a friendship with John the Builder.
Yes.
The northern builder that we've encountered in a previous episode when Alan is doing his accent and he gets very frustrated about the skirting boards. And he sort of catches Alan doing a fake James Bond tactical room clearing exercise in the empty house. And he was like, oh, yeah, that's quite good that, you know, maybe you could be James Bond.
Yes.
Something at Channing.
One of the more reasonable people in Alan's universe, I think.
Yeah.
He's just a normal guy.
He just loves working out.
Yeah.
He'd be a Joe Rogan listener.
Absolutely.
If it was the modern era. So you know how you got to focus on the bench press? He gets Alan to sort of squeeze his pecs.
Yeah.
Alan says his are only slightly more flaccid. The image of a flaccid pec, quite
very strong.
Mm. Oh, yeah. And then we get the shot of him. He's in the caravan and he's with Sonia and they're planning out the Bond marathon.
Yes.
They're doing the timings. He's deciding when he's going to have some fish cakes and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, a spy who loved me, dump.
20 minutes.
Allow for complication. Never related more to something in it. Yeah. You got to allow for complication.
Absolutely. I love the planning out of a movie marathon that will only become exhausting 1.5 movies in. Which is like, it's the entire, we're doing all of them.
It's so many movies. I don't know if it's even possible to get through them in a
bank holiday weekend.
Yeah.
No, I can't imagine
I wonder if Die Another Day had come out at this point. Is he including that? I think it was 2002.
Yeah, I feel like it would be.
Is he going to have to tack that on?
The World Is Not Enough, definitely out by this point.
Yeah. I think 2000. Yeah, Die Another Day, 2002. But what? When was it released? 22nd of November. It would be very funny to finish the Bond marathon 2nd of December. So he could finish the Bond marathon by going to the cinema and watching Die Another Day.
Yes.
he could watch a man change his race via the via the magic of technology and then try and melt the planet with a laser from the sun.
I had a friend of mine in high school, probably when we were about 14, who became like the oldest man in the world because he became obsessed with James Bond, like all of them.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He was marathoning them. Just as a 14-year-old, it was like, yeah, I've got the entire box set of every James Bond.
Wow.
And just was watching one, going one by one through all of them. It was kind of like, I mean, we all love GoldenEye on 64, but we don't need to be doing this. Like he just went all in on them.
Yeah, because a lot of the old ones as well, they're kind of like, they're so, like the Connery era ones, they're so like, they have that like the beats of a 60s movie where they're like almost unwatchable.
Yeah.
Like it's so like, nah, 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 you'll never get me, Bond. It's very hard to take seriously.
But I remember just spending, like it would be, he was in the process of always watching them. And so if you, I remember going around to his house and it was just whatever he was up to, it's like, we're putting it on. Right. And so I was like, I've watched Moonraker. And it's just like, this is, what are we doing?
Yeah. Moonraker is a real childhood favorite.
Yeah. It's got to be because he's in space, right?
Yeah, mental. The little Roger Moore in the little like silver space suits.
Jaws is in that one. That's Jaws.
Yeah, Jaws is in that one. I think Moonraker is the one where he has to fight like the two lesbian henchmen. I think that might be. And one of them is Grace Jones.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, which is pretty crazy. And then he kind of like subdues them into fancying him. I can't quite remember exactly what happens, but it's like, yeah, it's very odd. I do think Roger Moore may have been the best Bond.
You think so? Your fave?
Yeah, in the way that I think he has this kind of... Roger Moore knows what movie he's in.
Mm.
And like they're so kind of like... Because there's an inherent ridiculousness to the concept of Bond.
Yeah.
And the way in which he just kind of plays up to that, and it's like the kind of the ridiculous, like, sheer magnetism, darling.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a I don't know, it kind of...
I think that... I think clearly Daniel Craig is the best Bond, just like technically.
Yeah.
But yeah. For me, in my mind, it's just the age that like Pierce Brosnan in my mind is James Bond.
Yeah.
When I think James Bond, I'm like, and he's only like three films, I think. Does Pierce Brosnan only have the three?
Because he did
GoldenEye.
Yeah. GoldenEye.
World is not enough.
World is not enough. But GoldenEye, Tomorrow Never Dies. World is not enough. Die Another Day. Oh, and then I think it's Craig. So yeah, four.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But
good. I'm glad.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the Brosnan ones too. I think Brosnan kind of he had the look.
Yes.
He had the affect. And sort of Brosnan now. Did you see the picture of him at Wimbledon the other day?
No.
Where he's like beard, sunglasses, like double-breasted suit. Man was looking great.
Yeah, great. I'm happy.
Someone on Twitter was suggesting that like an old man Bond with Brosnan now would
bring
like
him back his Bond.
Yeah. That would be kind of sick. That like would a be one-off great. Old man Bond coming out of retirement.
Yeah, bring him back out. Just remember that he's just kind of a goofy actor.
Yeah. Didn't love Connery. Didn't love Lazenby.
No.
Timothy Dalton was kind of okay.
Mm.
We get an interesting debate about Timothy Dalton in this, where she's like, couldn't you, Lynn says, couldn't you cut one of the less important Bond films? Because he's worried about time. And then he's like, oh, Lynn, I've got to hear this. Which are the less important Bond films?
Lynn, I've got to hear this.
And then, yeah, got to hear this shit. And then she suggests, well, what about the Welsh ones? And he's like, what, Timothy Dalton? He wasn't playing him as a Welsh. Jones the Bond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, great bit.
Yeah, very fun. I thought of you. Jones the Bond. That could be your new moniker.
The Welsh. I love the surname. They love it.
They do. It's very popular in Wales. I know we've discussed that on the show before.
Yeah.
It's just worth hammering home, just in case any of the listeners weren't aware how many people from Wales are called Jones.
And my family, not Welsh at all. I think we've talked about this previously as well.
It's very funny. We're two men with Welsh surnames, neither of whom are Welsh.
Yeah.
Not in any way that we can trace. Yeah, no. Yeah. Must be at some point, surely. Maybe. But yeah, maybe. No. It's not coming out.
Not the case.
And so, yeah, basically Lynn wants she wants to be taken to her mother's grave because it's the anniversary of her death. We get a great line about this where he says, oh, Lynn, you're in a surprisingly chipper mood considering it's the first anniversary of your mother's death. Brilliant stuff. And so he agrees that he has time. He'll take her to the cemetery and he gives her 10 minutes.
Yes.
And then he lets her out of the car and he's like, go give it to her. And then he proceeds to air drum along to the theme tune from The Saint for 10 minutes. And then honks the horn to make her get in the car.
Yeah. I like this scene. That scene was great. When he first kind of like he's being a bit, trying to be a bit kind to her in the car. And then she's just like, I don't really need it. He's like, oh, okay, great. Well, you got 10 minutes. Get out there.
When he does no more than 10 minutes. That, another thing that changed the way I speak forever.
Yes.
Whenever I found myself before like emceeing a gig and being like, oh, I'm going to take a quick break now, 10 minutes. And then just catching myself saying no more than 10 minutes. and then being like, how many people in this room realistically understand that reference?
Yeah. And none of them.
No, yeah, probably not.
Or even if they do, they don't know why you're doing it.
Yeah, they're not sure. Yeah, the morning break in the middle of the stand-up comedy show.
Yeah.
Where you go to the grave.
Mm.
We also get a great bit, which actually I'd forgotten about, which is where he talks about the all of the like marble gravestones.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, yeah, you chop that into three slices, you'd have most of a granite work surface for a kitchen. He's like, of course, you'd have to turn it up
yeah.
the other way to avoid seeing the names of the deceased. He's like, and obviously the embossed lettering would collect crumbs.
I mean, it did make me think, like, oh, that is actually a good idea.
Mm. Yeah, what, stealing gravestones?
Yeah, I mean, it's a way to get some granite.
Mm.
If there you were so inclined.
There was a debate on the radio this morning when I was driving in about like churchyards in the UK and like, do they need more security? This is the kind of stuff you get on British radio.
Mm.
And they were talking about how like there are lots of, you know, obviously people are familiar with the stereotype of like teens congregating in churchyards to like drink or whatever, and they're like, oh, increasingly now, you know, it's like prostitution, drugs, all this kind of stuff is going
Golly.
On. And of course, vandalism. And people were like, yeah, various people were complaining, phoning in to complain that, you know, they'd left a little teddy bear on a grave or something and it was gone. Or and then I was like, this is a fascinating, I never think about graveyards at all. Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
I think about them often.
Do you?
Yeah.
On the Ooh Spooky.
I mean, partly, so yeah, but I do think a lot about graveyards.
Okay, what do you think about?
I mean, we used to, I don't know if I've told you this, but I tried to do it as a bit. But my mum used to take us to graveyards a lot when we were kids. When we go on holidays, we'd go and visit.
Yeah, to steal the granite.
Yeah, to steal the granite. That's why I was like, the granite's a good idea.
Yeah.
Just go and collect whatever teddy bears are left lying there.
But sell them on at the market.
I was in Brussels recently, and I asked the crowd, because I did the bit about how we used to go to graveyards. And it doesn't go very well because it's one of the things that nobody can relate to. I said, did anybody ever get taken by a family member to graveyards? And these two people were like, yeah, we did. Our parents took us to graveyards. I'm like, oh, your brother, you're related. They're like, no, we're colleagues. I'm like, oh, what do you do? They're like, we're both archaeologists. And I was like, wow. I wonder the percentage of people who become archaeologists who, as children, got taken to graveyards by their parents.
Well, you don't want to be digging stuff up in graveyards.
No, but you'd be like, I'm obsessed with, I want to. I want to get out there and find some bones.
Or at least you want to make sure that you're in like the older section of the graveyard.
Yeah,
you don't want to be digging up Nana from last
you
week.
Be getting some fresh ones.
No, absolutely not.
I assume that they're not taking them to more recent. I feel like if you're a parent and taking, like my mum did, it was just like, it was old ones. We're like, we're always going to old graveyards.
Yeah.
Was this
did this have any like religious connection for your mum, or was it like just an interest?
She just had an interest in it. Just a historical kind of interest in like old gravestones. She found really fascinating.
Oh, okay.
So she would always take us.
And the old ones typically not granite, so they're no good for work.
No good. Yeah. You can take them, but
no one wants a porous sandstone. Yeah. Like my work surface in my kitchen just has what is clearly the outline of a crusader in full armor with like a sword.
Yeah. The amount of work to fashion one of those old angels into a work bench in a kitchen is too much.
You're better off making it just a sort of rudimentary mortar and pestle. Yeah, wow. Yeah, I think I went to a graveyard once as a kid.
Yeah.
When I had like a thing, I was like curious about it and I wanted to have a look. So my mum took me to a graveyard once.
Yeah.
I think being like, fine.
Yeah.
A strange boy, but whatever. But I think that really got it out of my system. I was like, yep, okay.
I've done it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep, done it now. I actually live opposite a graveyard.
Oh, really? Good one.
Yeah, well, a church. And it's a really old church. It's from like, probably like 1,000 years old. So there are some really old, there are some actual like crusades, graves and stuff in there. Which, I mean, it must have smelled terrible getting that back. That's what you can imagine. But I don't know, not really wandering around the graveyard much.
No, right.
So it's funny, you live opposite something, you never go.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Just pop in.
Yeah, it's like when people come over to London and they want to go and see Big Ben or whatever. And you're like, oh, yeah.
I guess that's the thing.
Yeah. People come to my house and they're like, oh, a graveyard. Is that not kind of spooky living opposite a graveyard? And I'm like, no, not really.
Not really.
Yeah, there are a lot of pigeons. They do shit on my car. That's my main battle in life. dealing with the pigeons. But he comes back and he has an encounter with Lynn's new boyfriend, Gordon. We meet him for the first time.
Love Gordon.
The ex-policeman. And he threatens Alan.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't think you treat Lynn very well, and you're gonna start treating her better, or I'm gonna knock your block off.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know anyone said knock your block off, even in 2002. It also feels very American.
Knock your block off?
Yeah.
Mm. Maybe he's
knock
playing
your block
tough guy.
Off, buddy.
I feel like he was playing tough guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's clearly tough. He's got an inner toughness to him, Gordon.
Yeah. Yeah, that's sort of interesting, isn't it? With ex cops, is that are they supposed to be tough or not? Is that kind of a is cop a tough profession, or is it kind of a bit of a safety in numbers profession?
I feel like there's something about them, right? Where it's seen a lot of stuff, kind of profession.
Yeah, that's true.
Whereas it's like, you're not gonna pull one over on me. I've seen, like what he says is like, I've seen, you know.
Yeah, a lot of cops, I would say, are like, not very intimidating. But then you'll occasionally see, particularly in London, you'll just see some cop who's like 6'5" and just like ripped. And I'm like, why are you in the cops? Like, you could do anything if you're 6'5" and ripped, and you join with all these losers in the cops. Like, why? You could be.
Yeah, I feel like it's more they won't get flustered. That's the only, they're not particularly intimidating, but you can't really fluster them.
Yeah.
Is the impression I've gotten from every ex-cop I've ever spoken to.
Okay.
It's like, you can't really you can't really fluster them. They're just sort of like, they're not like intimidating guys, but they're like mostly normal looking chaps.
Yeah.
But I'll kind of like, you're not going to get them. No. You're not going to get them.
The only time I've ever seen cops get flustered is those, you ever see any of those like auditing videos where just like people who are somewhat mentally unwell just go around just filming stuff in town center or whatever.
Yeah.
And then eventually
talked about this on the air.
Yeah. And then eventually it gets to a point where they're talking to the cops and the cops are like, why are you doing that? And they're like, I don't have to tell you why I'm doing that. Yeah. And they're like, well, yeah, technically you don't. And then like, but it is suspicious. And he's like, why is it suspicious? I'm exercising my rights. And you eventually get to a point where the cops are just, they just don't understand what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of like they've reached the end of all of their like AI speech cues and they just don't know what to say anymore. And they just start going, well, carry on then, sir. But yeah, I think under normal, it takes a lot to fluster a cop. You've really got to
work on it.
Yeah, you got to keep pushing them. So yeah, do be sure to check out some of those videos if what you're trying to do is fluster the cops. So Gordon threatens him, he discovers that he's missing his The Spy Who Loved Me video, arguably the most important video of all, because he lent it to Michael. So he gets John the carpenter and they go down to the petrol station and we get this little scene where he's like, come on, John, show him your tool belt.
Yeah.
And what's weird is that Michael is just kind of excited to meet this man as well. He's just like, oh, yeah, it's a nice tool belt.
Yeah.
And he's sort of unaware that he's being like Raz. And he's like, yeah, look, I want my videos back. Any other property you've got at mine. It gets a bit nasty.
You know? Yeah. He's been hurt.
Mm.
And Alan never takes it well when he's been hurt.
No, he doesn't.
When he feels betrayed, he never takes it well. In fact, he takes nothing well. There's very little that he takes well.
Never has a character been in more need of therapy.
Yes.
Than Alan Partridge. Yeah. He does
less
not
in touch with, there's no, yeah, there's no character less in touch with himself than Alan Partridge.
So yeah, they get back for the Bond-a-thon. Lynn has come over because she's bought Alan a big marker pen, which is what he asked for. And then he, sort of getting an eye from Gordon, decides to give her a raise.
Yes.
And he's trying to kind of gauge what level of raise is going to meet with approval. And he's like, 7, 8, 8.5, 9, 9.5, 10. Tell you what, it's 9,500. Lynn's very excited. She goes off with Sonia to get them all some Sunny Delight. And then she comes back in and she tries to kiss Alan and he ducks it and she trips over and pours all of the Sunny Delight into the sort of like big tub of video cassettes. Yep.
no covers.
Yeah.
I think oversight on his behalf.
Yeah, yeah. And also still on cassette in 2002. I feel like Alan's the sort of person who'd be an early adopter of DVDs. Yes.
Probably he would have done Laserdisc, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
A big Laserdisc collection.
I don't think I ever had any Laserdiscs.
No, neither.
You were a Laserdisc guy?
No, I just remember, I think, a teacher having Laserdiscs.
Ooh.
Telling us about it. And we're like, wow.
Yeah.
Incredible.
I remember some people having HD DVD. Like, yes. The people who weren't, they were refusing to go Blu-ray.
Not on Blu-ray, HD DVD. HD DVD, destined to fail, name alone.
Yeah, it's not good. It's too many letters. Yeah. They should have thought about that. Mm-mm. But I remember that HD DVD was the official technology of the Xbox 360.
Yes, right.
And so they were kind of like the Xbox 360 guys, very much the Android guys of their time.
Yeah.
They were like, no, it's better. It's good, actually. You can get Halo on it.
Yeah. HD, it's no good. Blu-ray is so fun.
It's no good. Yeah. Yeah, Blu-ray is fun. Yeah. Who doesn't want a blue laser? Blue lasers look futuristic.
Yeah, yeah. It does feel, it still sounds like the future, even though it's definitely the past, Blu-ray.
Yeah, it is very much the past. Although some people are going back to them, you know.
People loving Blu-rays. They're still I wonder if it is having a rise. People love to go. They're back in stores. Back in stores buying stuff.
Well, I think the Blu-ray disc is, it's kind of like the vinyl for movie guys. Yes. There's like a lot of movie guys who are like, you can't get the quality on Netflix or whatever that you can get off a Blu-ray disc.
Yeah.
So they want the authentic crackle of a Blu-ray. I want to see Blade Runner as God intended.
Yes.
Straight off a Blu-ray disc.
Yeah. Absolutely. There's something I've written down, which I think must have been in one of these scenes. I can't remember why I've written this down.
Mm-hmm.
Scope.
Oh, yes. So they're talking about charity shops. Oh, that's it, because he's going through all the Bond movies.
Right. Yeah.
And then Sonia, he goes, add Nutty Professor to the clumps.
Yes.
And then she goes, well, very funny film. I get it. That's Scope.
Right.
So why do they keep changing these names? Consignia and Scope. It's the post office and the Spastic Society. Apologize if anyone's offended by the word spastic. That is the word he uses. And that is also what it used to be called.
Yes.
A lot of these like charities used to have crazy names.
Yeah. Right. So this is a charity shop.
You still see them around, and I think they are still called Scope. Yeah.
Okay. Right.
But I don't think anyone calls the post office Consignia. I think it was briefly owned by a company called Consignia or something like that, but right. I don't think it was ever branded as.
Okay.
Yeah, I have no record. As far as I can recall, it's always been the post office.
Yeah.
But as ever, the chicanery of the British postal system is extremely complex.
Yes.
It's like Royal Mail and the post office are two separate companies.
What?
Yeah, absolutely insane. And so it's just that like the post office sells Royal Mail services, but it isn't actually the same company.
What? I mean, there's no time, but why?
Well, I loved it when I was over in Australia, and just like every Australia Post is like a bargain bin store.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you go in there, like I remember walking there to post something to the States, and it was just, they had a huge display of air fryers.
Yes.
I was like, imagine popping in to post a letter and being like, oh, thank God. All my shopping needs in one place. I can finally get that air fryer I've been looking for.
Yeah. A lot of like coloring in books in Australian post offices. a lot of stamps you can get. A lot of kids stuff, you know? It's like, pick this up while you're sending a letter. It's good.
Yeah. You can do your coloring in, then you can send it off to your absent father for him to take a look. One of the great facilities. Michael turns up. With Tex, and Alan and him have a sort of coming together, you know, they forgive each other.
Mm.
And then Michael says he'll stay and watch the Bond movies. And of course, the only one they can watch is The Spy Who Loved Me, because all the others have been destroyed by Sunny Delight. Oh, yeah, there was a funny scene earlier where Alan puts two straws into the Sunny Delight for him and John to take with him in the car. Did Sunny Delight make it to Australia?
No, we didn't have Sunny Delight, but I assume I've. Is it still around?
I think they brought it back.
Right.
So basically, Sunny Delight was this like incredibly controversial children's beverage.
Right.
Because it's an American thing, I think. And they brought it over here. And it was discovered that it had basically so much sugar and coloring in it.
Yes.
That it was like having like a direct adverse effect on children's health. Like there was some child that turned orange, supposedly, from drinking it so much.
Yeah.
And I remember it was one of the classic things that like my mother would not let us have.
Right.
But of course, the adverts were everywhere. So everyone was rabid for this shit. And it was so sugary that everyone, and then I think it got taken off shelves. There was also some controversy that like the branding was such that it was always kept in the refrigerator at supermarkets to make it look like it was fresh, but it did not. It was shelf stable. It did not need to be refrigerated. So they were sort of like, there was some kind of deceptive shit going on with the Sunny Delight marketing. But then they brought it back a few years later with like some kind of altered recipe.
Yeah.
So I suspect, probably 2002 is peak Sunny Delight. So I can imagine this is what Alan Partridge is riffing on here.
Yeah.
They turn up. Tex wants to go off to the truck show, but then Michael says, well, we can just go in Skegness instead. You know, Timmy Mallett's going to be there. It won't be as good, but you know. And I would love to tell you who Timmy Mallett is.
Would love to find out who Timmy Mallett is.
I think Timmy Mallett was a comedian.
Timmy Mallett.
It's definitely a name I know. Oh, a television presenter. Okay.
Great name.
Let me have a look. Timmy Mallett, born 1955, is an English television presenter, broadcaster, author, and artist. Known for striking visual style, colourful glasses, colourful shirts, and giant pink foam mallet, known as Mallet's Mallet, as well as his utterly brilliant and blah catchphrases.
He is the most English-looking celebrity.
Yeah, he really is.
Only like one of those only in this country celebrities. There are so many of them.
Yeah, Peter Andre, for one. Mallet in Market Harbor, 2008. Christ. Privately educated Timmy Mallet.
Okay, Timmy Mallet.
Started off on radio.
Get us a look at this mallet. Oh, my gosh. That is Mallet's Mallet.
And we got a picture of Mallet's Mallet?
Yeah. There's Mallet's Mallet.
Oh, wow. That is a big mallet.
It's a big mallet for mallet.
Yeah. Jesus. In 2002, Mallet made West Ham United agree to stop selling copies of their mascot, Herbie the Hammer, in their club shop after he complained that it looked too similar to Pinky Punky.
West Ham United with smaller mallet.
Okay. Right.
Oh, boy.
Wow. And in 2004, he was I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, only 1 year after Wayne's Sleep. What is it? I think fucking Alan Partridge is getting people on I'm a Celebrity at this point. In September 2008, Mallet appeared on the BBC One politics show This Week talking about being positive when things get tough. Thank you for that, Timmy. And then he was in I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here again in 2008.
Double duty.
He entered the show by being captured in an oversized net and imprisoned in jungle jail. The celebrities were given an option to trade their possessions for him and David Van Day to enter. They refused. On 30th of November 2008, Mallet was the fourth contestant eliminated from the show after being placed in the bottom two in the public voting and taking part in a playoff bush tucker eating trial with Brian Paddock. What a sentence.
Poor Timmy Mallet.
Liberal Democrat politician Brian Paddock and former commissioner of the Metropolitan Police. Jesus. Well, there you go. That is Timmy Mallet.
Timmy Mallet. Great
name. Timmy Mallet.
I missed it. I'm glad you brought it up because I missed it. should have been on my sheet.
Should have been on there. Should have been. And so then, they discover that Texas taped over it with America's Strongest Man.
Yep.
A line that, again, changed the way I speak forever. I'm sorry, Alan. I really wanted to watch America's Strongest Man. Well, now you've got Norfolk's Maddest Man. And instead of watching America's Strongest Man, he decides what he's going to do is he's going to recite the start of The Spy Who Loved Me, and he recounts the whole thing, including the music video credits part, singing the that's how it goes, glang 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 glang, including the naked woman swinging on the barrel of the gun. Like, oh, what was that? Too late.
yeah
And we get a fun little smash cut where he's like, right, who wants to hear some more? And then we just see them watching America's Strongest Man.
And Alan's outside acting out.
Doing
his own little Bond movie.
Doing his fake Bond stuff. Depressing stuff.
Splashing around the Sunny Delight. He's having a great time out there.
You probably could use it as a sort of napalm, I would imagine. Probably it might actually be more of an accelerant than people think. There is also a fun line where he says, I wanted to watch Bond, not a balding Michael Bolton lookalike throw an oven over bales of hay. Which is a great description of America's Strongest Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, my sister's into it. She's always got it on when we go around there. Or maybe not always, but more often than you would think for a woman in her 40s.
Always has America's Strongest Man on.
Yeah, or some Strongest Man, World's Strongest Man, Europe's Strongest Man, whatever.
Yeah.
And they're always, it's always such weird events. I remember, Russell Brand years ago, Russell Brand, obviously a bad guy, but he had this bit about that someone lifting an aquarium full of cheese on Britain's Strongest Man. And that was actually, it was like a bar. And then at either end was like scrap these like glass containers of like aquariums that were full of like big wheels of cheese.
I used to work with a guy in IT who became a strongman.
Oh.
He's now currently a competitive strongman.
And he does that like World's Strongest Man type stuff, like lifting the big stones.
Yeah, like lifting, giant balls. It was like rocks and giant tires and all these. He's always posting on his Instagram and I'm just like, damn.
And he does that professionally.
I don't know if he does it. I'm going to say pro-am.
Yeah.
I think he might still work at IT, but he is.
How was he at IT? Was he like bursting out of the suit?
No, he wasn't. Like, he wasn't a particularly big dude. He's beefed up. He's really built into it. He was a tall guy. He was always a tall guy.
Right.
But he's really, I mean, he's put in the work and now he's a strong man.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because I would feel like it's one of those things where you just naturally have to have the body type for it. I mean, obviously there's like training involved as well, but like all of those guys, they have like that kind of barrel chest sort of, you know.
He was never like somebody who I would never have. Yeah. He was always a tall guy, but he was never sort of like a big unit, but he's bulked up since.
Because I think it was Muggleton who had the bit about Australia is the only country where you'll see an accountant with shoulders. Like guys who are just ripped, but they just do the...
Yeah.
Where'd you get that from, mate? Carrying the two? I hide it.
He probably still works in IT, I imagine.
Wow.
And is also a strong man.
That's such a... What a great dating profile that would be.
Yeah.
I work in IT, and I'm also a strong man.
He went from when I last worked with him, stayed... But, you know, on Instagram, following along, it was like, I think he went from like lots of photos of his lawn. He was manicuring his lawn. He had a great looking lawn. I'm like, oh, killing it. Lawn.
Well, he moved all those big stones off of it.
Then he built a shed. I'm like, oh, he's built a shed. And now he's a strong man.
Whoa.
That's the process. If you just want to go.
Well, he just got so strong doing the lawn and shed stuff. And he was like, I got to parlay this.
I know what I can do. I can start entering competition. He's just lifting these massive stones everywhere. And it's like, it's impressive. I'm always like, I'm throwing them likes. You know, I'm like, damn, this is heavy. It looks heavy. And you lifted it. Good work, man.
Not that useful. If you ever need to move like a Fiat Punto off of a child.
Yeah, he could do it. Then you'll absolutely.
I didn't have it. My sister actually, maybe this is what it is. She used to go out with this guy. It was huge.
Yeah.
Just a bit. I mean, not super tall. He was maybe like.
I think we got to the bottom of it.
Yeah. He was like 6'2", like kind of tall, but not crazy.
Yeah,
But he was like built like a brick shit house, right? Yeah. And this guy, I remember once we were like blocked in on holiday in the car park of some like bar or something in Spain. And then we were blocked in by some small hatchback like a Fiat Punto or something similar. And he just picked up the back of the car and just wheeled it out of the way.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? I remember being like 7 and being like, sick.
I mean, that's incredible.
What a move. To pull in front of your girlfriend's family as well.
Yeah.
What a move. Incredible.
That is incredible.
No one is challenging you at the dinner table.
You win.
That's the way. There are a few moves to assert yourself in a new family like that.
Yeah, that's incredible.
So yeah, maybe that's the benefit of being a strong man.
I mean, moving vehicles out of the way is pretty good.
Yeah, and then you've got like the guy who's like, you know, towing a plane with his dick or whatever, like the kind of, the increasingly abstruse.
Yeah, the combination of madman and strongman, the ones who are pulling planes with dicks, that's a mad strongman.
Yeah.
Madman strongman.
Madman strongman.
Yeah.
You've got to be a bit mad, I think.
Yeah, a little bit. Obviously.
Yeah. I also find the pulling a plane thing quite funny because it's like, aren't planes famously light?
Yeah.
Like relative to their size, they're pretty light. And also it is on wheels.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I could do it, but I'm just like, how? Yeah. Like uphill would surely be very difficult.
I think it's the size, right? Yeah. I mean, what you would want to be doing is like pulling a boat across the land and then you're like, well, he's really dragging. He's doing some work here.
Yeah. Yeah, you feel like the plane, once you've got it going.
Yeah, it's kind of rolling.
Yeah.
It's got wheels, momentum.
Yeah, exactly. Famously, we're scientists on this show. the producers of America's Strongest Man aren't fooling us. That's not even a full aquarium of cheese. It's Emmental. It's got holes in it. You're not fooling me.
Yeah, need Mythbusters, but specifically for the World's Strongest Man TV
show.
Yeah.
Those papier-mâché stones that are lifting. That would be so funny if it was all fake, like wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a very personality-based competition, sadly. Should be. Should be more personality in the strongman competitions.
Yeah, well, because so few of them really speak English. You know, it's like a guy from Latvia, like Raimir's Konstavius. You've got like Igor Estefson from Iceland or whatever. And then like one British guy who looks like he was let out of jail specifically to compete.
Always
in
coming
event.
In fourth. Never placing.
We just don't make big enough guys.
Yeah.
Compared to the Scandinavians and the Eastern Europeans, we're not. Yeah, I don't know,
it's
what
just
are they
more
feeding?
Americans, you know. That's why they
that is
do
true.
So well.
Yeah. It was like Dave Scott.
Yeah.
Who always lifts in a cowboy hat.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's it.
And that's the episode.
That is the episode.
Yeah.
Well, we hope you enjoyed it at home. Is this a free or a? I feel like this is a bonus.
Is it,
man? A cheeky bonus? I think so.
Congrats.
So, yeah, if you're listening to this, thank you very much for being a Patreon subscriber. You're the best. And I'll tell you what else you can subscribe to. Ooh Spooky.
Three O's and an H.
Three O's and an H. yeah. And you can also check out my YouTube special if you haven't already. That's on YouTube. You can see it. It's up there. I'll put a little link in the show notes. How about that? Catch you later. Bye-bye.